Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and in part one of today's podcast, we talked about the adrenals, and we talked about current thinking about low adrenal function and excess adrenal function, low cortisol versus high cortisol. In this part, we're going to talk about some solutions, some possible approaches to dealing with a chronic kidney function, I'm sorry, chronic adrenal function problems. And so let's take a look at the general approach for someone who has low adrenal function. We talked about the characteristics of that. A person might be fatigued, easily exhausted, burned out. So what are some of the approaches that could make a difference for a person who's suffering from adrenal burnout? Well, number one, rest is helpful. So, you know, clearly rest has a therapeutic action in adrenal fatigue, and some people aren't getting proper rest. So rest, relaxation, gentle exercise, not very heavy-duty exercise. You know, we'll see people, they're just trying to hammer out that exercise they see everybody else doing. And if you're in a state of low cortisol, adrenal burnout, that is not going to be the right type of exercise for you. What you need is gentle exercise. Yoga might be appropriate, but sort of low-intensity yoga. Also, an excellent form of exercise is Tai Chi. And then there's the traditional Chinese art of Qigong. And the whole idea in Qigong, I mean, the Chinese really get it about exercise, because in the West we just, you know, get on the treadmill, an elliptical, or pound out a couple of miles, and or, you know, heft the heavy barbells, use the universal machine, and, you know, we just put the pedal to the metal. You know, we think our bodies are like cars. In traditional Chinese medicine, possibly also in the Indian tradition, in looking at Ayurvedic medicine, they recognize that people are in depleted states sometimes, and they need a lot of rest. And they also need an exercise form which gathers in energy rather than disperses energy. So Qigong is precisely that. You use the breath. You actually try to energize the body by gathering in energy. You're sort of gently banking your energy fires and trying to bring your energy back up. So these are therapeutic ways to address low adrenal function. The other thing that can be helpful is salt. You know, we're on this low salt kick in this society. We make general recommendations to suit everyone. And while sodium is a problem for some people, especially a high cortisol person, it'll just cause more water retention and raise blood pressure and increase the risk of metabolic syndrome and heart disease and so on. For a person with low adrenals, salt is an absolutely essential nutrient, and they need to take generous amounts of preferably sea salt, and they also need to include with that volume. But it's not just about drinking tap water or drinking distilled or spring water, because you'll just dilute your sodium and you will have low blood pressure and your head will swim, you'll feel weak and woozy, and that's not good. So the low adrenal person needs to include plenty of salt and volume. Now, one approach that has been suggested for patients with low adrenals is an approach that was recommended in the 1960s by a guy named William McKinley Jeffries. Dr. Jeffries advanced the notion in an era when they were just beginning to have a romance with prednisone. Prednisone was considered a wonder drug when it was first introduced in late 1940s, early 1950s, and they thought it was just a remedy for everything. It was great. It got rid of allergies and inflammation and helped to energize patients who were exhausted with adrenal dysfunction. But then they recognized that there were a whole host of side effects from this prednisone, which actually tells you what cortisol does. Cortisol can make you, high levels can make you more diabetic, as from our experience with prednisone, make you fat, and also have an erosive effect on bones, hasten the development of cataracts, and it has a catabolic effect, the high levels of cortisone, so that you lose muscle and it's replaced by fat. William McKinney's Jeffries said, look, people don't need prednisone, but they could use just a little bit, a little touch of the medicine hydrocortisone, which is a synthetic form of cortisol. It's about one-fifth as strong as prednisone. And so ordinarily patients are given some, 10, 20, even 40 or 60 milligrams of prednisone. He recommended that patients get 5 or 10 or 15 milligrams of something that was one-fifth as strong as prednisone. So if a person was getting 5 milligrams of hydrocortisone, that would be equivalent of 1 milligram of prednisone. And just a little bit of a physiologic replacement, not an overwhelming amount of medicine, to help support patients. I've helped a lot of patients who are really, really flat and don't respond to some of the natural therapies that we're going to talk about in just a moment. I mean, preferably we use natural therapies to support adrenals. We get patients into a rest and recuperation mode, and patients can often recover. But there's some patients whose adrenals are so depleted, they're suffering from severe burnout or they have constitutional problems with their adrenals, they need hydrocortisone. This is actually a medicine that's used in the treatment of patients who have full-blown Addison's disease, and it really helps them. Incidentally, what's interesting is that when a patient has Addison's disease and they're on, say, a steady dose, maybe 15 or 25 milligrams of hydrocortisone daily, usually divided doses morning and afternoon, that's the way I like to give it. But in full-blown Addison's disease, you have virtually no adrenal function, so you're replacing your adrenals completely. They're told that if they get sick, that they should take a little more. The stress of illness can cause them to require a little more. Or say they're subject to a lot of stress, like the stress of travel or something. Maybe they're crossing several time zones in travel, and they're going to have sleep deprivation and exhaustion. They can take a little more, because that's what the adrenals do. So William McKinley Jeffries outlined a program, and but many endocrinologists think of him as a pariah, because he actually suggests that for patients who don't actually have Addison's disease, that they use a little bit of hydrocortisone. I think that that's a viable approach for patients with really serious problems, but it's not for everyone. What I prefer to use, my favorite adrenal support product, is something called Adrenal Stress End. And it's actually a product that is recommended by, I think, one of the real seminal workers in the field of chronic fatigue syndrome, who's Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. We've interviewed him several times here in the past on Health Talk and now on Intelligent Medicine. He's one of my favorite guests because he's a brilliant guy. And one component of chronic fatigue syndrome is just total adrenal deficiency and burnout. And so what are the things that you find in that product? What are the things that he chose in his formulation to support adrenals? So first of all, in Adrenal Stress End, by the way, it's a product you can get at drhoffman.com. You can get it off our website. It is a product that is, I guess it's available to the general public, but only, not through, I don't believe it's available through general chain pharmacies, but it's available through websites and through nutritionally oriented physicians. Vitamin C. Well, vitamin C is really important for the adrenals. It turns out that in vitamin C deficiency, the adrenals really tend to go. So a feature of scurvy, low blood pressure, adrenal exhaustion, and fatigue. So vitamin C actually does help to support adrenal function. It's essential. Vitamin B6 is in there in moderate amounts. But importantly, pantothenic acid, that's vitamin B5. You don't hear too much about vitamin B5, but it's an essential B vitamin that is a precursor to acetyl-CoA, which is helpful in the energy pathway that's important for synthesis of some of these steroid hormones that are present in the adrenals. And if you actually analyze adrenal tissue, you will find that it's very high in vitamin C, and it's actually very high in pantothenic acid. So it suggests the importance of pantothenic acid for proper adrenal function. Many formulas that are used for supporting the adrenals have either pantothenic acid or pantothene in them. Also, this product by Dr. Teitelbaum, Adrenal Stress End, contains something kind of controversial. It contains adrenal cortex extract. And this is an old naturopathic treatment for adrenal problems. And it dates back a long time when they used adrenal cortical extract for supporting adrenal function. The idea is that it is a form of organotherapy that's a little bit like taking natural thyroid. You take very small amounts of ground up natural thyroid and it supports the thyroid. That would be something like armor thyroid or natural desiccated thyroid. And natural desiccated adrenal cortex may provide a little bit of impetus to the adrenals to work better. This is controversial. I know that some people are concerned about taking animal tissue, particularly since the adrenals are considered by some to be an extension of the nervous system. We've had problems with animal brain consumption, with bovine spongiform encephalopathy, or mad cow disease, and some people really don't like the idea of accessing animal tissue that might be suspect in that regard. But the animals that are used for organotherapy and adrenal extracts are animals that are carefully cultivated, carefully inspected. Many of them are from organic herds in New Zealand where there's been no reported cases of BSE. The product Adrenal Stress End contains adrenal polypeptide fractions, which means that it's not really adrenal tissue, but some of the polypeptides that actually make up adrenal function and support that. So this is, I find it an effective product because, we test patients before and we test patients after using the saliva test that I talked about in part one, and we actually see adrenal function returning to normal. We're not sure if it's that or perhaps my recommendation that patients chill and relax and, overcome the physical circumstances of their burnout. But it does seem to work. Also, in this product, betaine or trimethylglycine, often cited as an adaptogen. We'll get into those later because adaptogens are important because they help to allow people to adapt better to stress. And they actually work in kind of a bimodal way. If you have a burnout adrenals, you can take an adaptogen, it'll bring up your cortisol, and if you have an overactive adrenal, an adaptogen by definition will regulate it and will bring it back under control into the normal zone. Tyrosine is another component of this adrenal stress end, and tyrosine is a building block for dopamine, which is an important product that's made not by the adrenal cortex but the adrenal medulla, and it is also a building block for thyroid hormone. So that's part of that formula. And importantly, one of the most important components in any adrenal support program, if your adrenals are low, not if your adrenals are high, you want to avoid this particular herb if your adrenals are high, but it is licorice. And licorice contains glycyrrhizin. And glycyrrhizin is a compound that you want to avoid if you have high blood pressure. So therefore, in patients who have heartburn, I give them DGL. That's deglycyrrhizinated licorice. It has the glycyrrhizin taken out so that there's going to be no high blood pressure causing effect or water retention effect. But in patients with low adrenals, we want to give them the glycyrrhizin because glycyrrhizin has anti-inflammatory effects. Remember, if you have low adrenals, you don't have good anti-inflammatory capabilities. And also, it has mineralocorticoid effects. It is something that helps a little bit to retain sodium and therefore raise blood pressure. So many patients have low blood pressure. One of the effects of licorice is that it has a pseudoaldosterone effect. Aldosterone is actually something made by the adrenals, and if the adrenals are weak, they're not going to make enough aldosterone. So more aldosterone will give you a little more, a little raise your blood pressure, give you a little more of a head of steam so you don't feel weak and woozy. Licorice also hinders the breakdown of cortisol. It hinders the breakdown of cortisol, which is actually good, so that cortisol builds up in the system somewhat when you take licorice. So licorice, again, would be contraindicated if you have excess cortisol condition. So it's important that you get tested if you're considering taking licorice. But it's a really great tonic used in many, many traditional Chinese medicine formulas. In part one, I talked about how it's often recognized that low kidney function or kidney yin or kidney yang is associated with sort of the Chinese way of understanding adrenal problems. And licorice is present in so many traditional Chinese formulas, which are designed to energize and revitalize patients and deal with allergies and inflammation and all manner of debilitating kind of health conditions. So those are some of the things that are helpful for low levels of adrenals. Also, other adaptogens, things that can have a stimulating effect and help patients cope better with stress. Rosuvin, which is rhodiola, and that is very popular in Russia and in Asia. It has a bit of a psychologically boosting effect, so it's helpful for patients who suffer from depression. But it is a little bit, for some patients, it's a little too much. It gives them anxiety, so you have to be careful with rosuvin. Generally well tolerated. Eleuthero, which is Siberian ginseng. You can also use traditional Korean ginseng for supporting debilitating conditions, low adrenals. And cordyceps. Cordyceps is sort of a rare combination of a insect larvae with a fungus that is harvested in the Himalayas. And it is something which has a tonic kind of effect for patients with low adrenal function. And there are many others that can be considered, but those are the basic ones. Probably a good idea to get a good amount of vitamin D as well, because vitamin D is a cofactor in the synthesis of so many hormones in the body. So that would be a protocol for low adrenals, and low adrenals can be coaxed along. So what do you do if you have excess adrenal function? If you have hyperactive adrenals, like many patients have, they have a form of, it's literally they're in a hyper-stressed state. And I can't tell you how often I see this in patients in where I practice in New York City. The average patient has excess amounts of cortisol, especially in the morning. Patients are anxious. They're in the fast lane, and they haven't yet hit that point where they are in total burnout, so they're overproducing cortisol. They may have symptoms of difficulty losing weight, mood problems, blood sugar problems. They're losing their skeletal muscle and replacing it with fat. That's a feature of hypercortisol. They're also having a higher risk of osteoporosis because too much in the way of adrenal hormones may have an erosive effect on bone. So these are some of the things that we will see. So what do we do? Well, first of all, we encourage lifestyle changes because, it's a little bit like conventional medicine say, oh, you've got this problem, here's a pill. You know, just take this adrenal stress formula and we can make all your adrenal problems go away. No, it's a lifestyle thing. And, just informing patients that they're showing high levels of stress can be helpful. And it will help them to chill out. And ultimately, their adrenals will calm down. So any, meditation, relaxation, even some patients who are over-exercising, they may be really hammering the exercise. That creates stress for their body in a chronic injury healing pattern. They need to take it easy because they're really hammering their adrenals. Also, more sleep will be helpful. We encourage actually those patients to have less in the way of sodium. Those are patients who probably would do better with less sodium. They also generally do better on a lower carbohydrate diet because there is a bit of a concordance between excess insulin and high levels of cortisol. They're sort of a chicken and egg phenomenon. So you can sometimes bring that under control. Also, for those high cortisol patients, we suggest magnesium, because those patients invariably, the stress causes their kidneys to literally leak magnesium, and they need more magnesium in their system. That's one of the effects of high cortisol. And magnesium can have a stress-reducing and relaxing effect. Some patients note a calmative effect from excess magnesium. Most patients with high cortisol will measure their magnesium. It's very low. Okay, so some of the things that help excess cortisol in terms of natural products. L-theanine, it is a great stress buster. It's a component of tea, but it's not the caffeine part of the tea. It's the part of the tea that has sort of a relaxing and focusing effect. But it's not sedating. It doesn't knock you out. It just has a relatively calmative effect, and it's been shown to have a bit of a cortisol taming effect. We don't want to kill people's cortisol. We don't want to completely knock it out, because that would be cause them to feel exhausted and debilitated. We don't want to take them from the frying pan and throw them into the fire. So L-theanine is part of many formulas. It's part of a formula that we use called Cortisol Manager. Cortisol Manager also contains a proprietary blend of magnolia extract. Its botanical name is Mahonia. And there's some studies that suggest that Mahonia has a bit of a cortisol inhibiting effect. So it's used actually, like products that are designed to slim you down by reducing your cortisol. They often have magnolia extract. I don't really think those things are great to make you lose weight, Cortislim, things like that. But they're probably not that effective for weight loss, but they might help to tame excess cortisol. Ashwagandha is another nice one. Ashwagandha is a real adaptogen, and it actually helps to strengthen and fortify you, but at the same time, it has a sort of a calmative and relaxing effect. I sometimes like to contrast it with Rosamond in patients who are very anxious and hyper. I might not suggest that they take a lot of Rosamond. That's better for patients who are sort of weak and need stimulation. Ashwagandha is something for patients who are sort of exhausted and on the cusp of burnout, and can be effective. It's a very important mainstay of Ayurvedic medicine. And then there's some evidence that phosphatidylserine, which is often purported to be helpful for Alzheimer's disease. I included in my 18 supplements for Alzheimer's disease because the nerve sheaths are literally insulated with phosphatidylserine and phosphatidylcholine. And so it may, if your wires are frayed, so to speak, the nerve conducting fibers in your body are literally sizzling or frayed, the phosphatidylserine may provide a little more insulation on those nerve fibers so that you have less in the way of cognitive decline and perhaps less in the way of the harmful effects of burnout. I think the evidence on phosphatidylserine is a little bit sketchy as a cortisol reducer, but it's often included in formulas that are designed to tame higher levels of cortisol. Ultimately, I think that taming cortisol is a bit of a lifestyle process. And, so I encourage a more holistic approach, not just taking a pill. I will also reiterate, and I mentioned this in part one, that cortisol and DHEA are sometimes on a seesaw. And sometimes when we see a patient who has high cortisol, they'll have low DHEA. Providing them with a little more DHEA sometimes helps to tame their excess cortisol. It's like a seesaw, one end goes up and the other end goes down. And so we bring up the DHEA, and the cortisol sometimes is more effectively tamed. But interestingly, in patients who have very low cortisol, we also want to use DHEA. It's not going to suppress the cortisol further because, for example, virtually every patient I see who has Addison's disease, they're fine with giving them back artificial cortisol in the form of hydrocortisone, but they omit giving them DHEA. They even give them mineralocorticoid medication to raise their blood pressure, but they kind of forgot that the adrenals also make DHEA. So that I've actually really helped some patients with Addison's disease by recognizing that they need a little bit of DHEA as well. So those are some of the approaches that can be helpful for adrenal problems. We invite your questions and comments, you can send them to radioprogram@aol.com, and we'll try to answer them, not individually, but during one of our podcasts. Our Q&A with Layla is the venue where we answer questions from our listeners. And we hope that you enjoyed this treatment of adrenal problems as part of our clinical focus series, and we'll rock on with more medical and nutritional issues in future editions of Clinical Focus that we'll try and crank out on a weekly basis, and we'll work our way through the entire realm of nutrition and medicine by the time we're through. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.